A Matter of Spirit is the quarterly justice journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. This article appeared in the winter 2020 issue on the military.
Militarism in the United States, A Recent History by Nick Maley. Nick Maley, a retired U.S. diplomat, spent 3 decades explaining American government and society to foreign audiences. He still works internationally to prevent war. In his 1961 farewell address, President Dwight D. Eisenhower famously warned of the, quote, military-industrial, quote, complex. He said, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted." According to some accounts, Eisenhower wanted to insert, quote, congressional, unquote, into that phrase, but was dissuaded by his political advisors. Almost 60 years later, his warning has not been heeded, and the military-industrial congressional complex has grown to include the entertainment industry and many other elements of U.S. society. Consider, for example, the most profitable films, almost all depicting futuristic weapons, conflict, and mass destruction, the popularity of shoot-'em-up video games, or the widespread availability of automatic weapons originally designed for use on battlefields. Consider the well-documented militarization of police departments around the country, fostered by federal grants of military surplus equipment. After the end of World War II, U.S. factories that had produced the planes, tanks, and other war material reverted to producing consumer products. A few years later, these factories again switched to manufacturing weapons. After the active fighting in the Korean War ended, the same factories kept on making weapons, fueled by the Cold War competition against the Soviet Union. Older Americans remember the climate of fear promoted by politicians and hawkish military leaders, such as debates about the missile gap. Hawks claim the missile gap put the U.S. at a numerical disadvantage. In fact, the USSR had far fewer missiles than claimed, and the gap was actually in America's favor. Meanwhile, the nuclear arsenal grew into the nuclear triad of bombs delivered by airplanes, ground-based siloed missiles, and submarine-launched missiles. Popular entertainment featured films and television shows, Victory at Sea, Combat, about war, as did comic books, Black Hawk and Sergeant Rock, and some comic strips, Steve Canyon. During the Cold War, the U.S. developed a permanent defense industry at the urging of politicians and some military officers who wanted the latest technology to fight hypothetical wars. Often, Hawks cited the containment policy proposed by George Kennan, a leading Russian expert and very senior diplomat. Kennan became convinced that the Soviet Union was expansionist and recommended vigorous efforts to contain it, such as the Marshall Plan to rebuild Western Europe. Most government, military, and opinion leaders, however, saw containment primarily as a military strategy. Over time, the need to contain the Soviet Union through integration with other nations' armed forces created a new profit sector, the overseas arms trade, which further strengthened coordination and cooperation among the military, Congress, and weapons manufacturers. defense industries were encouraged by congressional allies and military officers and soon spread their facilities across the country. For several decades now, at least one defense industry establishment has been operating in every single congressional district. Members of Congress, no matter what their personal views of military spending, are under pressure throughout the election cycle to maintain and expand defense contracts that provide jobs and a measure of economic security to voters in their districts. In parallel, military bases, large and small, popped up or expanded across the country and the world, and this expansion generated more demand for weapons and other military equipment. Although there was some reduction of U.S. forces overseas after the Cold War ended, the war on terrorism added bases in other areas of the world, like Central Asia and Africa, and new kinds of bases for high-tech weapons like drones. Military commanders frequently cite the adage attributed to psychologist Abraham Maslow, quote, "When your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail," unquote. Increasingly, our only tool is a hammer, military force. As defense spending has increased, resources have been diverted away from diplomacy and development efforts as well as domestic programs. The fiscal year 2020 discretionary budget from the Trump administration requested a 5% increase in U.S. military spending, already higher than the combined defense budgets of the next seven nations with large military budgets, and a 9% decrease in non-defense spending, which includes domestic programs and diplomatic funding. Diplomacy has also been weakened since President Trump took office due to his withdrawal from arms limitation treaties, criticism of allies, and firing of senior career diplomats. In an October session with the Plowshares Fund, Representative Adam Smith, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, acknowledged that our military budget is funding the development of weapons that we do not need, like low-yield nuclear weapons, because of pressure from the weapons makers. Representative Smith said, quote, "The message that is driven, more is better, spend more money, be tougher, be stronger, have more." That message is compelling to a lot of people who are nervous and just want to be reassured. But that message is driven in large part by contractors who want them to believe that so that then they will give them money, unquote. Stated differently, our elected officials are complicit in the growth of the military-industrial complex, which now consumes about half of federal discretionary spending.
All of the arguments for increased military spending ignore the cost to human beings at home and abroad. To quote President Eisenhower once more, quote, "Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired, signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed," close quote. We see this in the reductions in domestic spending on education, health care, support for needy families, infrastructure, and more. We see this whenever another country purchases expensive weapon systems from U.S. companies, using money that it could have spent on its own people's welfare. Then there is the toll in human lives in conflicts where U.S.-produced arms enable the deaths of innocents, and the plague of gun violence in this country. We can all counter these dismal trends through advocacy, citizen diplomacy efforts, first inspired by President Eisenhower, who founded People to People International, and support for movements and organizations committed to nonviolent means to address conflict counters. Some of these are as simple as writing to a pen pal in a different country, while others require more effort from developing a relationship with our members of Congress, or participating in people-to-people programs for training and serving with Christian Peacemaker Teams or Peace Brigades International. Recent work by academics like Erica Chenoweth offers empirical evidence of the effectiveness of nonviolence. Statement by faith leaders like Pope Francis supply moral urgency to disarmament efforts as well as nonviolence. The Hebrew prophets describe God's kingdom as free from violence in texts like Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, where the wolf will live with the lamb and the viper does not bite. Jesus, too, saw the kingdom of God as one of peace and compassion, not one of violence. We are co-creating the peaceable kingdom whenever we mobilize public opinion, lobby elective officials to reduce military spending, or promote nonviolent methods like diplomacy or arbitration to resolve conflicts. 2018 total federal spending. The U.S. federal budget consists of two broad categories, mandatory spending and discretionary spending. Mandatory spending includes items such as Social Security payments, Medicare, and interest on the federal debt. The defense budget comes under the category of discretionary spending. As a portion of the overall federal budget, defense spending is approximately 15%, but it constitutes almost half of all discretionary spending. To put this in context, consider that many of the costs we associate with the federal government, highways, airport safety, federal law enforcement, education, diplomacy, and even veterans benefits, also come under the discretionary budget. Mandatory spending is what its name implies. These are obligations that are already made. The only flexibility in the federal budget comes in the area of discretionary spending. When more of the discretionary budget is spent on defense, less is available for other needs. This information is graphically shown in two pie charts contained in the print edition of this issue. To view these graphs, go to our website at www.ipjc.org/a matter of spirit. U.S. spent more on defense than the next seven countries combined. A bubble chart contained in the print edition of this issue shows the top eight military spenders in the world and their share of the world population. In 2018, Americans made up 4% of the world's population, but spent 36% of the world's military spending, more than the next seven countries combined. To view this bubble chart, go to our website at www.ipjc.org/a matter of spirit. Cost of post-9/11 wars. Since the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, fighting the war on terror has taken on new dimensions. From one operation in Afghanistan, the war on terror has expanded to the U.S. being involved in actions in 80 countries around the world. The dollar cost to the U.S. for military spending since 9/11 through 2020 has been estimated at $5.4 trillion. With an additional $1 trillion for veteran care throughout their lifetimes. The human cost, in terms of human suffering and deaths, has been even greater. Some statistics illustrate this. Dollars spent, $6.4 trillion. Lives lost, civilians, 313,000 to 335,000. U.S. contractors, 7,950. U.S. military, 7,014. Opposition fighters, 254,000 to 260,000. Journalists and non-governmental organization workers, 1,343. Total casualties, 770,000 to 801,000.